Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Best product line, awesome sales staff, and great service department. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right. So here we go. Time now for our play-by-play call today. Buckle up for another Doug Birdsong tour.
Soto switched on by Nigo. He'll cross him over. Kick it to the corner. Toomer open for a three. Bang! Goal! Oh, my almighty! What a shot!
Sounds like he hit it. And in the background, who was that nut?
Some crazy PA announcer.
They're at American tomorrow at 7, 6:30 the airtime on Eagle 107. They go to D.C. I want to say Bender Arena. That sounds right?
Yes.
Ever tell you my Bender Arena story, or should I save it for the last half hour? Probably got to get Neil first.
Yeah, I'll have to save it.
You'll love my Bender Arena story. It's really
all cool. Right. I'm looking forward to it.
Only done one game in there, but it was memorable. Right? And it's not that Penn State went in and won the game, which they did. It's how we got there. All right. First of all, we bring in the king of the cell phone. Hopefully you got a new one after yesterday's debacle. Neil Coolong. Neil, welcome.
Straightened out, and it's great to have you with us.
It probably helps to have a phone that's less than 3 years old, which is what mine is now. Amazingly, I haven't cracked it or broken it, and it still kind of works. The battery is just kind of dead, and if it gets full, it kind of goes haywire. I think that's what happened.
Well, actually, we went out and we bought phones. We're going to get, we talk about, okay, for our birthdays, let's get phones. Okay, great. All right. Now, our phones were 12 years old. So naturally, my hope was at the end of basketball season, when I have more time, we'll get phones. Well, my old phone and I did not have that agreement. And the sucker died like three weeks ago, so we had to go out and get new phones. So now I am now iPhone 11. Amazingly, after being, I think, iPhone 2.
Mine was a relic. I'm not even sure that the label on mine wore off. I can't even tell which one it is on the outside. I got to dig in and find it, but I don't even know. I'm not sure. I just need a new one.
I mean, they wanted mine as a museum piece for the Apple Museum. I'm like, really? Great. Fabulous. We didn't know these were still in existence. Now, the problem is rebuilding your phone base, because mine, when I mean it died, it died. So I've been asking people left and right for their phone numbers. It's really, yeah. Okay, let's start with one of the favorite topics for people. What does one do with Bud Dupree?
It's interesting. A lot of what's coming out now, and you're hearing reports that the Steelers plan to tag him. If they also plan on picking up Vance McDonald's option, which is also something that's going out there right now, I don't understand how they think they're going to be able to get this all under the cap. And I'm also somebody that believes legitimately 95% of the salary cap just simply doesn't exist. It's a myth. It's
right.
More of a guideline.
It's what we would refer to as the Maginot line.
Yes, yes. That's a very good analogy. You have to do a lot to really get competitively close to the cap. And when your goal is to roughly spend to the cap minus maybe 3%, which the Steelers have been over the last decade, being close to it isn't that big of a deal. They spent their money in free agency last year. I think the Minka Fitzpatrick thing came along and took away some of that, you know, residual money that would have been there this year. But all of those moves together do not suggest they're able to have the space to tag Dupree. So I don't know if that's possible or not. I think to some degree, I think they thought there was a decent chance of a new CBA being in play and certain, you know, moves that would have made it, they would have been able to restructure contracts the way that they usually do, to free up some space to be able to make a move with Dupree. It doesn't look like that CBA is going to get signed in time. If they do tag him, I think it's probably because they feel like something will get done and then they'll be able to, but they're not going to be able to carry that kind of a cap charge. And we're talking about probably $15 million, $16 million, somewhere in there. Right. They're not going to have that space available without being able to do anything to their roster right now, which they really aren't if they're going to pick up McDonald's contract. That's without question the biggest amount of money, and that's $7 million. So you're talking total available for them is going to be $9, $10 million. Unless they're going to use the transition tag on him, which to a point, to me, it almost seems unethical to do that. Yeah. I wouldn't really think that's a very good business move on their part. I think you have a guy that I think any agent is going to be able to negotiate something in the ballpark of 5 years, $70, $72 million with probably 30-ish million guaranteed, just based on what we've seen from the pass rushing market over the last 2 years. He's going to get that kind of a contract in free agency. To hold him off for a one-year deal of around $10 million, that's just not right. I don't think that the Steelers operate that way. I don't think they're intending to do that. So they know a lot more of what's going on internally than I do. So if they really do intend on giving him a franchise tag, which really isn't all that much better than the transition tag, something else has to be coming that we don't know about yet. Outside of the CBA, though, I'm not sure what that's going to be.
Neil, we're talking about big numbers here, obviously. And I know I would like to have my big numbers reserved for more complete players. But that's not the way the NFL is right now. I mean, you're not going to tell me that Bud Dupree is a complete player, and you're absolutely not going to tell me Vance McDonald's a complete player.
I would definitely agree with the latter. I think that Dupree, the way that he was used oftentimes last year, especially against more mobile quarterbacks, guys that want to get out of the pocket, I think you saw him spying a lot, which doesn't really boost his numbers much. He might not be able to be the all-out pass-rushing option that T.J. Watt is. I also don't think anybody would argue at this point in time Watt would get substantially more money on the open market than Dupree would. But there's a lot of value to what he's doing as a run supporter at times in coverage as well. I think he's rounded out his game well from where he has been. But some would argue that, well, okay, great, he just did it 1 year in his contract year. What's the rest of his career going to be like?
Right.
Statistically speaking, you can't say he's going to continue to improve at that level. So where is he in year three in that deal? I think those are fair questions to have, and maybe that's something that would kind of front-load a contract and make it a little bit more manageable in the very short term, just 1 or 2 years, as opposed to 3 or 4, which a thoroughbred like Watt is going to get. All those things would play into it. I do think, though, there are teams with, you know, more cap space than the gross domestic product of some third world countries, and they have more than enough money to grossly overpay just to get them on their team, because along with this CBA, you're going to see them introduce a much stricter salary floor. You're not going to be able to pull in. You're not going to be able to be at half of the salary cap entering a season the way that you are right now. You know, there are still 10 teams with $70 million in space. They can take on a Bud Dupree contract. In fact, I'd argue from a labor perspective, they need to pay somebody, you know, and really a large part of that is they don't have a quarterback who's, you know, coming up to contract right now. So they don't have that huge chunk. They've got to kind of make up that ground a little bit. Storing space year in and year out is not a solution. It's not getting any team any better. As we've seen from Indianapolis, now we're seeing it in Jacksonville. These are teams that have had success recently, added more cap space, and let the talent that they've had walk or, in some cases, randomly retire in August. You can't get by not paying players. You know, having some cap space is good for the sense of flexibility, but it's not proving to be a major difference between champions and non-champions. You know, having quarterbacks on good deals certainly is going to help, but I'd argue that all that means is that you have a good quarterback. You know, you can make that argument up and down. Somebody would pay Bud Dupree if he was out there. Right now, I don't think the Steelers are really able to do that, and it's not often that I say a team truly can't make a move because of cap constraints, but that's the situation they're in. And I would argue it's less about the cap and more about the current status of the CBA. If there's a new CBA in place, they're able to restructure contracts and put years into the future beyond the CBA for a lot of their key guys. Hayward, for example, they can't do that where they sit right now. So without that, they don't really have the space available to make moves in this year. They definitely can in the future. A lot of it would depend on when they have that cap situation resolved, and it doesn't seem like that's going to happen this spring.
How long? I believe what the full rank and file is now allowed to vote on it, correct? That's the way I understand it.
And yes, they've put it to the whole representation now.
How long does that take? I know you're talking about, 1,200 members, I guess, right? But how long is that realistically going to take? Is there a time limit as to when they have to vote? Or?
You know, I off the top of my head, I don't know if ownership gave them any kind of hard deadline. It probably wouldn't be the best move for them from a negotiation perspective to do that. But a lot of what's riding on both sides here is the start of the new league year. I think the
right.
players, certainly the ones like Bud Dupree, who are hitting free agency, would love to have a new CBA set up with a lot more cap space available for teams, because then he's going to cash in even more. And from the owner's perspective, it's more on them. But this filters down to the players as well. The new TV deal that they're going to negotiate with their broadcast partners is going to ensure that there's a ton more cash coming in over the next 10 years. That ensures a large salary cap ceiling, certainly in the short term, but in the short term, it will impact that as well. So both sides, I think, have motivation to make sure that there isn't a good deal for both parties to be made before the new league year would start March 17th. That, to me, I guess, does suggest that maybe there is a hard deadline in place, but after that, there isn't one. So I'm hearing, Ramon Foster, the Steelers union representative, talks about this a lot. We have another year of the CBA in place. We don't need to make a deal right now. The TV deals aren't going to go anywhere. That's debatable, but I think overall, the players do not want to be forced into a deal very much like they were back in 2011, getting a bad deal, as it turns out, for them, whereas they got a really good deal back in 2006, the last time both sides were kind of pushed to the deadline. I would think both sides would feel better about getting this one done ahead of schedule, getting used to everything that's going on before the new revenue kicks in, but I can see from the players' perspective why the last thing they want to do is rush this and make sure the younger guys this is really affecting are fully aware of what's going on.
The way I read it, though, Neil, I think the only thing that's an issue is the 17th game. The owners, because they know the 17th game is a gigantic step in a physically demanding game, there are a lot of, quote, like, give backs in here. I mean, it all comes down to playing 17 games, I think.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And to me, the first time I read the proposal the owners were giving them, my first thought was, wow, they would have killed for this back in 2010.
Yes.
I mean, this is an unbelievably better deal than what they got the first time. And you're right. I think the owners gave it to them saying, we're going to give you a little bit more because we want you to sign this right now. We want the TV deals in place. We want all this to be taken care of. We do not want even more negative public relations that we're getting right now. And keep in mind, this is a league that yesterday is talking about bringing back previous official management. You know, the referees people are coming back to fix the problems that they have on that side of the game right now. They've taken enough beatings over the last decade. I really think the owners want this to go away quickly, smoothly, quietly, as best they can. And that, to me, is really where that 48.5% revenue split came from. The owners are giving a lot more than they have in the past. I'm not saying that that's a better deal for the players, but they're giving a lot more. So with that, in my mind, and there have been a couple agents that I've confirmed this with as well, in my mind, it's going to be really hard for the players to get past 17 games. It would behoove the players at this point to put together their best package and use that as part of the acceptance of a 17th game. That's not going anywhere. The owners are not going to take that off the board.
That's right.
Except that that's going to happen. If that's the case, you can cash in, because look at their first position. It's a, you know, you may not think that 2% on a revenue deal like this would be all that big of a bump, but you're talking several $100 million, over $1 billion in total value.
That's
over
right.
The next decade. The younger players would have to love that. You're looking at a massive increase of minimum salary for the younger players, a roster increase, which I don't really even see how that benefits the owners in any way at all. It's clearly done for the players. They're getting a lot from this. I'm not saying that's the deal they should take, but I think they should take the approach that we're probably going to have to play 17 games at some point, or they're going to lock us out.
And
this is going
to
be.
The owners feel like they compromised by going from 18 to 17. So I mean,
I would agree with that too.
I mean, I'm telling you what they think. They think they compromised by going to 17.
Right, and I bet they hate their owners among them. They hate the fact that they're giving this much. You're going to cut. They want two games. It makes a lot more sense. It's a home and an away. You know, it makes sense to go two games. Only giving one and cutting preseason games is a loss to them. They're losing something with this deal. Maybe the idea is we'll give a little bit now. The next negotiation, we can see how it goes, and maybe go to 18 games then, over a decade of this. But I think all in all, they're getting a lot more in this TV deal than what we're going to be reporting. And as unlike this is typically for the NFL, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they have a plan for the use of streaming technology. To increase the value even more. They're able to go back against CBS, NBC, ESPN, and say, we've got Amazon here with the ability to do this. We got this. It worked great. Twitter did this for us. You know, when Twitter did something of value for us, you better believe we're going to look into that. They're not asking us for a whole lot to broadcast games. So if you want it, you're going to have to pay a little bit more. And we're going to be using these residual services as well. So I think they have much more of an opportunity to make a lot more money than what we might know today. And I think that's why they're willing and able to give a little bit more. And the players should pay attention to that.
Thank you so much, Neil. Appreciate it very much. And congrats on the new phone.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, guys.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Okay, so I didn't tell you my Bender Arena story, huh?
No, I haven't heard it yet.
So at this time, Bruce Parkhill's the coach, so this goes way back. So, of course, Bender Arena is on the American University campus. And at this point, it's a relatively new arena. And so Frank Gardini is the one working the games with me at the time. So Frank says, hey, let's drive down the day of the game. I'm not usually crazy about driving down the day of any game, usually. And you'd be really surprised that the network really likes you going in the night before, too. Okay, it's just the security of having you there. But I said, okay, let's just do this. All right. So we drive down there. Frank says, is American, you know, East Carolina, because Frank had been in East Carolina. East Carolina used to play American. I know where it is. So I said, okay, great. So I didn't even think twice about it. So we're driving down. We go down to D.C. We're there. Turn here. Turn there. Boom. And we pull up to the gym. And I looked over. I said, Frank, this looks like McDonough Gym. Huh? I said, are we on Georgetown's campus? He goes, well, now we have to find it. And we get directions and we don't quite get there. We get directions, we don't quite get there. We get directions. We finally get to the American campus. And we're on the air at 6:30, by the way, for a 7 o'clock game. And we finally pull up to the arena after a long, convoluted trip all the way around. And I still had not done the pregame show with Bruce. I had 9 minutes to do it because it was 6:21.
Oh, man.
So I interviewed Bruce, set up all the equipment, and got on the air while Frank parked the car, of course. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. What a mess.
Yeah, they are right next to each other, if I remember correctly. I've only been to Georgetown once for Bucknell football, and you can get lost down that part of D.C. pretty quickly.
Well, I hadn't even thought about it because I wasn't driving. And he said he'd been there before, so what am I supposed to think?
Yeah, exactly. That's all him. That's a violation on him.
Like, come on, man. Get yourself together.
I mean, I get they're near each other, but you're talking about probably two different conferences, two different arenas. I mean, come on.
Well, we pulled up, and I said this looks like McDonough. Plus, there was nobody there, which was a tip off that there might not be a game that night. Nobody there. Bender Arena. Fond memories. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Well, I'll tell you, Sunbury Motors has great product line. Ooh. And a great sales staff, and their service department is really terrific. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right. Obviously, last night, when you sit there and you look at last night's game, like they're up big, they're hitting shots in the first half, and they're actually playing well defensively. The question is, why aren't they putting together two halves like that? I have no answer. I can't answer that question. I don't know. If I had an answer or could pick up on something, I'd give it to you. I don't know. Now, look, Lamar had obviously just an awful night. He blocked three shots. He grabbed, six, seven rebounds. I mean, he did some other things really well. I mean, he was still playing, but, I mean, 3 for 19. I want to say of the 19 shots, only three of them were threes. He's 3 for 19, and a lot of them were point blank. I mean, shots that he hits in his sleep and missed layups. Oh, it's just a hard, hard night. You know, I've seen this before. I mean, Joe Crispin, senior night. Now, Joe scored. Now, Lamar scored more points in his career than Joe did. Joe scored 1,986 points in his career. Joe Crispin and Penn State, this is in a year they went to the Sweet 16, led Ohio State by 20 points at halftime. The game was a Saturday afternoon, by the way. It's a Saturday afternoon. They lead Ohio State on senior day by 20 points at halftime. Lost. Lost by 6. Everybody's like, oh. Then they go to the Big Ten tournament, beat Michigan by 2. Then Joe plays really a great game. He and Titus Ivory both. And they beat Michigan State, which was ranked 2nd in the country, to get to the Big Ten semifinals. That gets them into the tournament as a 7 seed. In the tournament, they beat Providence. I had told Jerry Dunn after the announcement, I said, look, you're 10 points better than Providence. And I remember that game was tied at halftime. I was like, you got to be kidding me. How can this game be tied at halftime? Penn State's 10 points better. Well, Penn State had a really good second half, and Matt, they won the game by 10. All right.
Right.
So now, Then they play North Carolina. They beat North Carolina. And then they lost to Temple in the Sweet 16. But the point goes back to they get the senior day, and Penn State was okay down the stretch in the 2001 season, okay. Then lost that senior day game and then won a game and then, boom, felt better about itself and got going again. Right? 2011. Penn State loses three of its last four games in the regular season. Loses three of its last four. Some number like that. There's some number like that. And on senior, and part of that was on senior day. Senior day. Taylor Battle, they're playing Ohio State. They lose by 21 points. Well, now they got to regroup. They got to go to Minnesota to close out the season. And they win. Hmm. And then they get to the Big Ten tournament in Indianapolis. And they go out. They're expected to win the first game against Indiana. And they do with complete ease. Right? Then they had the epic 36-33 game with Wisconsin. Then Draymond Green and Michigan State, they beat them by 13. Went all the way to the Big Ten championship game. So, like, you see, like, these little things that happen during the course of a tough year. And you're like, okay. You know, I mean, like I said, the 2001 team, they go to the Sweet 16. They lost three of their last four regular season games and had a 20-point lead at halftime on senior day and lost. Now, I'm just giving you a history lesson here. They're all different. I'm not going to tell you that that's exactly the scenario you're going to see, but believe me, I'm saying, is it possible for a team to hit a rough patch right before postseason? Sure. But this season has been baffling across the board. The consistency has been Kansas. The consistency, for the most part, has been Gonzaga. The consistency has been, to its credit, San Diego State. I think Dayton has been, you know, again, consistent. But again, like consistent in mid-majors, you're playing the 107th-ranked schedule in the country. Okay, you're not playing at Michigan State one day. Oh, and then you go to Wisconsin the next day. You're going to St. Bonaventure one day, and then your next game is at Rhode Island. Okay, no offense, it is a different world. Okay, I know that world. I've done that world. But Dayton's the kind of team that can make a deep run because one game at a time with the right matchups, you know, Toppin's a hard guy, for example, to match up with. But they've also had the benefit, and this is always going to be the problem for Group of Five in football versus Power Five and mid-major versus Power Five. Right? You know, Dick Vitale can yell and scream about the little guy, and I think it's great that as many little guys get in. But you want to know why the Power Five gets more respect? In football, okay, does the Group of Five UCF team have to play at Michigan one week and then come back and host Ohio State the next? Penn State has done that. In fact, Penn State's done that several times, where they played Michigan and Ohio State back-to-back. Sometimes it's separated by a bye week, but they've done it. UCF has never had to do that, ever. And I haven't even gotten into playing Michigan State or Wisconsin yet. Teams that physically, like, to, over the years, you play Wisconsin, you may win the game, but when it's over with, they've hit you hard. There are a lot of teams that have come out of a Wisconsin game beat up, even though they won the game. Well, the UCFs and the Memphises of the world and so forth, they can win a one-off because they're very, very talented. They're all very well coached. The question is, can you win nine of those? And my answer has always been, I highly doubt it. Same thing group when you look at mid-major versus Power Five. Dayton can beat anybody. Dayton can beat Kansas. They lost to Kansas in overtime. Okay, Dayton could be Colorado, even though they lost to them in overtime. Their only two losses were in overtime. But the difference is that for 2.5 months, let's just take Penn State. Penn State's ranked 20th in the country. So what's Dayton? What, fifth, fourth? something like that. So they're 15 spots behind Dayton in the poll. Okay. While Dayton has been playing a very good team in Richmond, a good team in St. Louis, a decent team in Duquesne. But if Duquesne's on Penn State's schedule, you're thinking that's one of the down games, right? Let's be honest. Rhode Island, St. Bonaventure. Okay. Some of the other teams in that conference that are down. That's who they've been playing. Well, they haven't had to go to Assembly Hall in Bloomington. Okay, could Dayton win that game? Absolutely. The problem is the next game's with Michigan State. Oh. And then the problem is then the next game is with Michigan. And then the next game's Penn State. And then the next game's Illinois. And then the next game's Wisconsin. And then the next game's Maryland. And then the next game is Rutgers. That's the problem. Okay? You don't have to run that gauntlet when you're a mid-major as opposed to a Power 5 team. And in this particular year in the Big Ten, there have been very few teams in the Big Ten this year that have been down. And that's the difference between mid-major and Power 5, is that it's not just... It's not, for example, can Dayton beat Michigan State? There is no question. Yes, they can. They've got the talent to do it. Can Dayton beat Penn State? Yep. Can Dayton beat Maryland? Yep. Okay. Could they do it in a span of 7 days? I vote no. In fact, I emphatically vote no. Because there is a gauntlet of not just the physicality of it, but the emotion of it. That every single game is in the Big Ten, a big game against another big, talented, well-coached team. See, that's the difference. Josh Heupel at UCF, I'll use them, or take Memphis' coaching staff. Memphis' coaching staff, hey, Luke Fickell's a heck of a coach. He's done a great job at Cincinnati. Okay? That's also the same Cincinnati team that lost 71-5 to Ohio State. It's the same Memphis team that has had a great year, has some momentum and so forth, and can and loses by 2 touchdowns to Penn State. And only gets 3 touchdowns out of it. In a one-off, okay, when they got a chance at one. Okay, imagine having to do that every week. Every week. I mean, hey, good news. You get to play at Kinnick Stadium. Now, can Memphis win at Kinnick Stadium? Sure. The problem is they'd have to come back next week and play at Michigan State. Could they win that? Maybe. Then they got to play in Michigan. Win that? I don't know. See, that's the difference. It's the difference is not just having being a really good team where you can beat somebody. It's you have to beat several teams to do it. Can't do it. Not deep enough. Not deep enough. Not talent enough. And I think that's a big difference.
What's going to be an interesting dynamic to me, Steve, with the tournament is when you look at the Power 5 conferences, to me, 3 of the 5 Power conferences, I will have fears of, no question that they're talented better and maybe that they're battle-tested might help them down the stretch in the tournament, but are their legs? Because of all the reasons you mentioned about how gruesome the schedule has been for the Big Ten, the Big East, and the Big 12. Those 3 conferences have been brutal this year. So how are those teams going to fare after they get through this regular season of playing each other? Then how do they deal with playing each other again in their conference tournament? And then they have to go and play in the NCAA tournament and go on different ends of the country. What's that dynamic going to be like? That, to me, is going to be the story of this whole entire tournament.
That's part of it, but there's another part. I've always maintained this about postseason play when you've gone through a tough conference. When you're in a tough conference and the scouting is so good, look, I mean, do you want me to give you an in-depth scouting report on Michigan State? I can. I've seen them twice in person. I've watched them on tape. The whole thing. I mean, I could do that. Well, believe me, and coaches are exponentially better scouts than I'll ever be. There will be spots open on the floor that have not been open for 2.5 months. So that does, if you got enough in the tank, you're going to sit out there and go, man, I haven't been this open in a while, because in a short turnaround, they can't scout you as well. They don't know you. And that does come into play. Again, you look at Bucknell. Bucknell's had success in the tournament.
That's definitely one dynamic that is in their favor.
But again, now I'm talking about the NCAAs. When you're in a one-off, right, you can beat anybody in a one-off. And I mean, I was there the night Florida Gulf Coast beat Georgetown. I was at the game. Like, can you believe what we're seeing here? And then, by the way, Florida Gulf Coast, to its credit, then went out. Who'd they beat next? San Diego State? Or was it Creighton? I think it was Creighton.
Yeah, I think it was Creighton. Yeah.
It was Creighton, because it was the one time I saw Doug McDermott play in person. And they got to the Sweet 16. Then the Sweet 16, I think Florida mauled them or something like that, and it was over. And Kevin's always hated this. Everybody loves Cinderella the first weekend, right? They do not love Cinderella after that. Oh, Florida's Flame, Florida Gulf Coast. I don't think I want to watch that. Is Kentucky and Duke on?
See, I'm in the minority. Once we get a Cinderella team, I'm riding their wave until they're done.
Worst rated Final Four game in history. Butler, VCU.
Yep.
The worst rated ever. Right? Had nothing to do with Butler, nothing to do with VCU, but like, you get to that point, people are, you know, like, brand names stick out. Like, and Butler, didn't Butler have Gordon Hayward on that team?
Yeah, I think that was the year Butler went to the title game and lost to Duke, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and Hayward took a shot from midcourt.
Yeah.
At the end to win it and hit the back of the rim. Now he, you know, Jim Nance made a great call on that. Now Hayward makes more money than Tony Romo. All right, so we'll take.
So true, though.
We will come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Hey, quick note to Erica Shames of Susquehanna Life magazine. How about a profile on a major media mogul like The Suit? Huh? I'd sit down for that interview. What are you laughing about? I don't think it's good that someone in your position is laughing about me proposing an interview and a profile of your boss.
No, I'm just thinking about how she would react to that, because she comes into the station all the time to record her spots that she does with us.
And you're laughing about me, your boss. You notice I didn't call him my boss. it's like, yeah, whatever. Sure. I mean, you'd read that, wouldn't you?
I'd be intrigued.
That makes one of us. All right, so you'd read it to find out what my quotes were.
That's part of it.
What do you think of all those awards? Is what? He told us about all of his awards. Hey, the Silver Sow Award. Very nice. All right. I'm just saying, Erica, you got the suit. But, I mean, it's really part fact, part fiction. And believe me, some of the stuff that we talk about that you think happen to be fiction actually are fact. Some of the best stories are born out of truth. Oh. All right, tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk about Bucknell women's basketball because they've got the Patriot tournament coming up. And I'm going to play a quote, and this is from, I think, about a week ago, from Cale Sanderson, about the state of collegiate wrestling, and then we're going to get into that a little bit tomorrow. It's far more effective playing him saying it, but it, you know, it tells you a lot about his philosophy and what he thinks the state of the game is, the state of the sport. And they'll have the Big Ten Wrestling Championships coming up this weekend at the Rack. As Dick said, Dick from Milton called, he says, it's only like 6,000 tickets available total. Each school, he said, did he say each school got 100? Does that sound right?
I believe that's what he said, yeah. Very small amount.
See, the NCAAs, you know how many you get in the first round? 400. And that includes what the players get. That includes the players' allotment. You want to know the best time to get tickets in the opening weekend? It's the second round. You want to know why? Because the teams that lose, their fans sell their tickets.
That definitely makes sense there.
It's also interesting being in the arena, and I've been there before, where the underdog starts winning, and suddenly all the fans of the other teams start rooting for the underdog. Because, look, they don't really want to face the favorite, because the favorite's actually pretty good. So if the underdog can win, A, that's really cool, and B, it also eliminates competition. It's really neat to see everybody come together as one as Florida Gulf Coast is beating Otto Porter in Georgetown. Go, little guy, go! I told you that story about being at the U.S. Open and Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, and Bernard Fernandez are playing. And Fernandez is playing better than McIlroy and Woods. And some guy yells out, go, Tiger, go! And a guy yells out, go, Rory, go! And this guy standing right next to me, he says, go get him, other guy!